Rideshell. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I'm the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and the brand new Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. And I've recorded more than 5,500 interviews since 2003, almost all on foreign policy, and all available for you at scotthorton.org. You can sign up for the podcast feed there, and the full interview archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show.
Okay, you guys, on the line once again, we've got the great journalist Kit Clarenberg from The Gray Zone. Welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Real good. Happy to have you on here. Listen, I want to talk all about this great Kosovo article here in a minute. First, I want to give you a chance to talk about what is going on over at Twitter. And last I see here, you have this great article, in-depth article explaining from the 19th about how you got kicked right off of there. But I wonder if there's any developments or you're still banned from Twitter. And did they have any kind of excuse? Tell us the story.
Well, I mean, I got mass reported by Zionist activists who made all sorts of ludicrous claims that I was advocating violence and gang rape. I mean, this is what they do because they are liars and propagandists. And so I was shunted off, and I've been given conflicting guidance on whether I will be allowed back. In a sense, I'm kind of enjoying not being on it because it means that I see less photos of dead Palestinian children on a daily basis. At the same time, I do miss the battle, and I think that it's particularly. I made this point in my op-ed. It's particularly disturbing because one of the methods by which Julian Assange was dehumanized and cut off from the outside world was the removal of his internet access in the Ecuadorian embassy. This resulted from a British intelligence black propaganda campaign that was concerned with framing him as a nefarious Russian agent who was leading a secret Kremlin effort to destabilize Spain by backing the Catalan independence referendum. And yeah, this was a very effective means of cutting him off from the outside world because this was a way of ostracizing him. So when a year later the British police stormed into the embassy and dragged him out in handcuffs, he'd been somewhat off the public radar for some time. I do worry whether this is a precursor to something deeper and darker. Britain has just passed the National Security Act. I've written about this for the Gray Zone. A truly terrifying bit of legislation, which is modelled on the US Espionage Act, which, of course, Julian may well in mere weeks be extradited to the US to face charges under, despite the fact that he's not a US citizen. It creates all sorts of new criminal offences, and several advocates of the law have explicitly stated that quote unquote writers at fringe blogs, i.e. myself at the Gray Zone, could fall foul if we report on the wrong matters or the, mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say there, I think a lot of us are concerned about getting kicked off Twitter. I right now have quit it to get my book finished because, as you were alluding to there, what's going on in Palestine is it's just too much, and I don't have the time in the day. So, but I'm going back on there, and that's not the same thing as being censored and kicked off of there, which is a big concern. But I just wanted to point out that, you know, I'm not concerned about being Julian Assanged, but it's not melodrama for you to say that that's a real concern, because unlike me, everybody's favorite podcast host and radio show host here and book author, you do real hard hitting, I got secret documents journalism. And
yes,
over there in the old world without the First Amendment. And so you really could be in trouble, because this is the kind of reporting you do is, hey, everybody, look what I got, a secret British government document, usually, that nobody's ever seen before, which is, in fact, what we're going to be discussing about the Kosovo War 25 years ago here in a minute, for one example. Yes. So people should know it's not the same as the rest of us worrying about being censored, which is already horrible. But getting in real trouble is, you know, the real trouble here. And it's so important that you are, of course, able to still do your journalism and get it out there where it matters. And, you know, you talk in here about the suppression of your followers. This was something that was the same for me for, I think, more than a year, or three quarters of a year or something. I had a hard limit on my follower count, and the number would go up and the number goes back down. And I know that you talk about how they were doing that to you, and right when you should really have been going viral. In fact, that was my thing too, is it was the Yemen campaign, I'm pretty sure, is the one that got me in trouble at the beginning of 22, the summer of 21. But anyway, it is a hell of a thumb on the scale if they can just pick and choose who's allowed to say things on Twitter there, just that part alone.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, yes, as I mentioned, the Twitter files releases, which were hugely significant and, of course, got ignored or shat on by the establishment media, one of the very interesting things that it stated that under the pre-Musk Twitter regime, Twitter engineers didn't need permission to censor and suppress accounts if they had less than 10,000 followers. Now, like I said, in the summer of 2022, when the Grey Zone was reporting on Paul Mason's leaked emails, which showed that he was targeting anti-war leftists for reputational and legal destruction, and was cooked up a harebrained scheme to try and expose the Grey Zone as secretly run by Russian and Chinese intelligence. We're not, but I would say that, wouldn't I? Every single day, and I mean, I say that quite literally, my follower count would nearly hit 10,000 and then it would crash back down by a few hundred. And it's happened day in and day out until I guess they just kind of gave up and they said that we can't stop this train. So yeah, they were absolutely determined that people didn't see what I have to say. That's deeply disturbing. I do think in some ways that Twitter has improved under Musk, although, I mean, that's not saying much. Although he does, yes, seem to have a particular, blind spot in his free speech crusade when it comes to Israel. And we know, based on a leaked recording, that the ADL, which has been working with Elon on censoring pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel voices on the platform, that TikTok is seen as a huge threat by Zionist organization, because it means that younger generations are being exposed to the realities of Israeli occupation, and they're having none of it. And so this is why the US government is now moving to take full control of TikTok, because it's too dangerous. Now, you have to perception also applies to all other to all forms of social media, and I mean Facebook is as good as in US government control, because Zuckerberg, or Zuckerschmuck, as Trump hilariously called him the other day, is fully in bed with the security and intelligence services, and indeed has a threat reduction center. A contradiction in terms, if ever there was one, which is staffed by ex-Pentagon and CIA people, it is already in effect a wing of the US government. If Musk allows too much free speech on his platform, then he's probably going to suffer the same fate as TikTok, one way or another.
Yeah. Now, so one thing that has also really been of concern here is something that you alluded to at the beginning, which is, there's no real way to appeal or talk to, I mean, whenever I emailed with them, I might as well be talking to an AI bot or something, right? It's never clear. This is the offense. And then you can say, well, listen, but see, you're taking that wrong. All it means is this, and that's within the rules. And then they say, oh, okay, blah, blah, like a human conversation. There is no human conversation. It's sorry, there's a rule and you tripped the rule and we'll let you know, yeah. You know, something.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, that's exactly my experience. I've attempted to engage them initially, not least because they sent conflicting emails saying you'll be banned, unbanned after 1 month, you'll be unbanned after 3 months. And then, you know, all you get is this static of, after careful review, yeah, right, that we've decided that, yes, that it was a legitimate breach of the rules and therefore you won't be reinstated. I think that it's deliberately wearying so people won't challenge these decisions. And I have very little faith that I'll be back after 3 months. There are several examples of people who allegedly got banned, well, in theory got banned for 3 months, who were never allowed to come back. So in the meantime, I am using Telegram and Substack as my primary communication method, however it's not the same thing. And I mentioned that my mental health is all the better for being off it. There have been so many occasions over in recent weeks where I've just, particularly around the anniversary of the bombing of Yugoslavia, where I desperately wanted to be able to challenge barefaced lies and propaganda and I've not been able to. And I think, you know, that's precisely the point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a purely dystopian thing. It's like driving around Los Angeles. It's not supposed to be this way. My God. So let's talk about, you know, how it is that you picked this fight. I mean, you mentioned it was Zionists that were going after you for condemning what was going on in Gaza. I mean, all I've ever seen of you on there, I had this exact same conversation with Alan McLeod a couple of months ago. All I've ever seen you write is journalism, or, you know, certainly if it's stating your opinion on there, it's always a sober adult way of saying things, not like me. I get cranky in a way that I think you're far more mature than I do. So I have a real hard time believing that you would have actually said anything that crossed the line. You're just saying you angered some Zionists and they told on you and got you in trouble. Like, this is kindergarten.
Oh, yeah. And it's just what's remarkable as well is that there were, in effect, there's this one particular woman called Heidi Backram, who is a very prominent two-fisted supporter of Israel, who is still peddling nonsense about Hamas having beheaded babies and all this other stuff, and she is quite clearly a what's the term? It's quite clear that she's playing a lead role in getting pro-Palestinian voices booted off the platform, and so she will highlight comments or take them out of context or distort what people have said, and then this will lead to a pile on from all of her followers. And there was this one of her confederates or accomplices openly stated that while he didn't usually believe that people should be physically beaten for just because of their political views, he advocated me being brutally assaulted every day on the basis of my opinions. I reported this tweet and it's still up there. So that's an actual incitement to violence and indeed threat, which has gone unnoticed. And then I'm the one that gets removed. There is no justice. But I think that this is just more generally, it's worth bearing in mind that there is a protection racket type aspect to this, where it's like, you know, the mobsters don't need every single protection payment, but they know that if one person doesn't cough up, then that there's a huge risk that others might do the same. So, yeah, this is deliberately intended to have a chilling effect and to demonstrate to people, yes, it's a free speech platform where you can say anything, except there are caveats to that. And it's, I know for a fact that there are some people who pull their punches, some activists and journalists, and just average citizens that I know, who are extremely careful about what they say on X, and get more and more careful the more bans there are. So the more blatant the bias is. So yeah, a chilling effect is hardwired into this, and the ultimate victim are the general public.
Yeah. Well, and it's worth noting that when Musk bought the thing, he made it a lot less worse and purged a lot of the government employees out of there. And yet still it's a weird, I mean, it's not exactly a monopoly, but it's, there's sort of a trinopoly or some kind of thing, quadrinopoly on all this social media. And you're either on Reddit or you're on Facebook or you're on Twitter. And it's, especially political Twitter, is huge. It's, as Raimondo admonished me for taking a break from it to finish writing my last book, this is the battlefield. You got to be out there. This is where the political fight is had. And so to be able to have, you know, him or any person on there, you know, in his employ, be able to put their thumb on the scale in this way against anyone without some kind of very clear violation of, it seemed, as he said before, the law, right? If you're threatening somebody or something, you can't do that. But otherwise, you know, direct incitements to riot or something, come on, burn that building full of people down like you're the right sector, something like that, that's a violation. But otherwise, ain't this America or what? And it is an American company, and so our free speech tradition ought to apply over there in the old world where things, you know, never were quite as clear about whose sovereignty comes first, the people or the state, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a living in a top-down monarchic system, of course, people well understand that. That there are things that they can't say because it might, you know, offend royalty. But I mean, what's really worrying, and I've written about this for my personal website, is that there is a shadowy British Ministry of Defence-run body called the Defence and Security Media Advisory Committee. Now, it issues what are known as D notices, or a do not publish notice. Now, this is very, very British in the sense that if, say, a story gets published or the committee thinks a story is about to be published that contains information the British government doesn't want in the public domain, they'll write to journalists and editors and say, please, could you seek our advice before publishing? Now, in theory, this is voluntary and advisory, so they can't legally gag reporters and dictates them what they can and can't report on. However, there are virtually no examples in history of this system ever being broken. People always comply. So in 2013, when The Guardian started reporting on Edward Snowden's leaked NSA files, the DSMA committee duly wrote to the entirety of the British media and said, don't go anywhere near this. And they didn't. So this is a story of like global significance that was picked up everywhere. And it was ignored in Britain. Now, that is really, really quite disturbing. However, what's even more disturbing is the DSMA is now trying to bring US social media companies to heel. So they are engaged in lobbying efforts, and they are also pressuring the British government to take regulatory action to force Facebook and Twitter and like Reddit, I guess, as well, to sign up to the DSMA. So in future, the DSMA can write to them and say, can you please remove all posts mentioning this? Could you please use your algorithms to prevent people seeing this particular inconvenient truth or damaging expose? And or else, which is deeply disturbing. And so Britain's culture of censorship and state secrecy, which is the most advanced and pervasive in the Western world, is now being globalized, courtesy of England.
How do you like that?
Hey, guys, I had some wasps in my house, so I shot them to death with my trusty Bug Assault 3.0 model with the improved salt reservoir and bar safety. I don't have a deal with them, but the show does earn a kickback every time you get a Bug Assault or anything else you buy from Amazon.com. By way of the link in the right-hand margin on the front page at scotthorton.org. So keep that in mind. And don't worry about the mess. Your wife will clean it up. Well, folks,
Sad to say, they lied us into war. All of them. World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq War I, Serbia, Afghanistan, Iraq War II, Libya, Syria, Yemen. All of them. But now you can get the ebook, All the War Lies, by me for free. Just sign up for the email list at the bottom of the page at scotthorton.org or go to scotthorton.org/subscribe. Get All the War Lies by me for free. And then you'll never have to believe them again.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, now listen, there's good reason for them to want to censor us. It's the same reason they bombed the TV tower in Belgrade when their war was failing back then. They don't want people hearing the other side of the story. So let's talk about how Bill Clinton and Tony Blair lied us into war 25 years ago. Bill Clinton's big victory lap after his acquittal in the Senate. And they started this war and they lied like hell. And you got this great new piece about it. Kosovo War at 25. Blair's secret invasion plot to topple Milosevic revealed. And of course, they ended up getting him in a color code of revolution a little bit later on the next year. But so it's the anniversary this month, I guess just a few days ago, of the start of the war. Yeah. So we don't have that much time. I do have a hard break at the top of the hour. I got to switch interviewees here. But can we at least just focus on how they lied us into war and then at least touch on this new revelation that you have secret documents that you are revealing here?
Yeah, sure. So it's like, I'm amazed given how revealing these documents are. The British officials openly advocate committing war crimes and killing civilians because it's worth the cost. So in effect, it's towards the end of the 1990s, there a CIA and MI6 backed terror group called the Kosovo Liberation Army, which was tied to Al Qaeda and financed by the drug trade organized, started attempting to quote unquote liberate Kosovo, i.e. purge it of all Slavs and Serbs. And they did so they tried to bait Yugoslav authorities into aggressive crackdowns upon them and indeed the civilian population in order that what was a counterinsurgency against the KLA could be presented in the Western media as a genocidal attack on the wider Albanian civilian population, which it wasn't. Now, in early 1999, January, the Yugoslav police engaged in a shootout with a large number of KLA fighters in a town known as Racak. In the wake of this, it left a large number of KLA fighters dead. An individual called William Walker, who was the head of the OSCE Kosovo Verification Mission at the time, convened a press conference where he led journalists to a site where all of these people lay dead in civilian clothing and claimed that this was a merciless, brutal genocidal attack on innocent civilians, when in reality they were terrorists. So this manufactured public consent for bombing Yugoslavia in 2 months later, because it was claimed that it was necessary to prevent more rash acts from happening or the entire Albanian population being ethnically cleansed. So they bombed Yugoslavia for 78 straight days, and they destroyed most of the country's independent industry. They deliberately bombed the headquarters of RTRS, which is the Yugoslav state TV channel, which had been broadcasting. As you mentioned, it was a very brutal form of censorship because RTRS had been broadcasting intercepted audio of NATO pilots discussing targeting refugee convoys, and bombing Kosovo Albanians who were fleeing the country upon the KLA's orders. There was the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, which was set up to just to prosecute Serb officials. There are numerous US officials were on record as saying that NATO will not be held accountable for any crimes it committed. And the total number of people killed by NATO bombing isn't clear. It could be into the thousands, and there were many children among them. It was a war based entirely on lies. It is still to this day held up as an example of successful, quote unquote, humanitarian intervention. But they are so, the Western powers are so determined that people don't know the truth of matters, that on the 25th anniversary at the UN Security Council, Russia and China moved to have a hearing on the bombing. The Serbian Prime Minister flew out to New York specifically to give an address to the UN, and Western powers torpedoed it. They prevented this from happening because I think that it is key to understanding Western hypocrisy, because in effect the precedent set by Kosovo was the intervention was that it was illegal, i.e. it did not have UN Security Council authorization, but it was legitimate. And then this precedent was used over and over again to justify destroying Libya, destroying Syria, and more so gearing up for all-out attack on Ukraine side in the proxy war that's currently ongoing and may start collapsing very soon. But what I found in these documents is really interesting, because there are multiple passages in which it is discussed how the bombing really frightened the Chinese and the Russians, who were worried that it would be used as a precedent for doing the same again and again, quite reasonably and logically. And so the British were determined to allay these fears and reassure them that it won't be. And then, of course, they immediately did. So I think that we are kind of seeing the humanitarian intervention project, or the lie, unravel now. Today, this is what's happening in eastern Ukraine right now is a direct result in many ways of what was inflicted on Yugoslavia 25 years ago.
Yeah, and of course Putin directly referred to Bill Clinton's precedent that said, oh, look, I got the same excuses as you, so I can violate the law and do whatever I want, cross whatever border Absolutely. I want. And the first thing he did was bomb a TV station, too, which was a pretty obvious thing, an antenna. Anyway, so listen, you skipped, though, that they lied that there were 100,000 men and women and children missing and presumed murdered, and mines full of them, you know, and mass graves never happened. And they also lied about the conditions of the war. It came out in the middle of the war that, we didn't tell you, but we demanded the right to occupy every square inch of Yugoslavia. And that was the deal killer. And Milosevic actually was willing to negotiate on virtually every point, which was the problem. And so they had to add that Appendix B, that secret Appendix B, just to kill the deal that he was in the middle of accepting, so that they could have the war they wanted to have, which makes them as bad as W. Bush or anybody. Netanyahu.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I did gloss over that for reasons of time. But yeah, the Rambier Agreement, this was a publicity stunt, which was concerned with giving the appearance that the quote-unquote international community had exhausted all diplomatic means to prevent the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. It was always intended to fail, because they set completely ludicrous terms that no country would ever accept. And yes, it would not only grant NATO and its personnel freedom of movement anywhere they liked in Yugoslavia, it would insulate them from prosecution for committing any crime. No government in the world would ever accept this, and US officials subsequently admitted that the whole point was we knew that they wouldn't accept it. We deliberately set the bar to an insane level. It was framed as such as Milosevic's unquestionable bloodlust. He's refusing to negotiate because he wants to kill the Albanians so much. It's just nonsense. But there we are. As you say, this is being used as a precedent by the Russians for their war in Ukraine. And this has led quite amusingly to a lot of wittering in foreign policy circles and magazines about how that Russia is, quote unquote, abusing the precedent. Well, no, it's not abusing the precedent. It's using the exact same grounds that was used to criminally destroy Yugoslavia 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kit, let me clarify one thing I wanted to ask you. Did I hear you right? Your mic isn't that great today, and I want to make sure I understood you right. That did you say that I was wrong about they get to go wherever they want? Because I have the block quote here, but it might not mean what I think it means. But it does say here that they and all their vehicles and vessels and so forth shall have free and unrestricted passage and unimpeded access throughout the Fry, including associated airspace and territorial waters.
Yeah, absolutely. They could go in. But I think there's as well, they said, if NATO feels the need to take over any facility, then Milosevic would have to accept that without argument.
Right.
If NATO felt the need to make any improvements, quote unquote, such as building a bridge, say, Yugoslavia would have to fit the bill. Ludicrous.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure because I thought you were saying that I had overstated it. So I just want to make sure that I wasn't overstating it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not at all. No. I'm understating it, if anything.
I see. Okay. Just making sure about that. So listen, I mean, I am writing this book and I've got probably 100 pages on Bosnia and Kosovo. So, and you're in it repeatedly from all your great journalism, the Canadian documents that you revealed and all this other stuff. And so I'll be anxious to find out what you think of it if I can ever get the thing done.
Yeah. Well, no, I look forward to it. I know that you will, Scott.
I mean, you have done such great work on this. And so I'm real grateful for that. I really hope that everyone will go over to the Gray Zone and look at this great piece. It's Kosovo War at 25, Blair's Secret Invasion Plot. Oh, and yeah, I mean, I'm sorry I didn't let you really elaborate too much about this, about how Blair is really trying to jern Bill Clinton into, like, come on, put your army in there, Bill, go. And I guess just things came up and prevented it from being able to go through. And then I guess finally the Russians... they dropped Appendix B, and then they got Chin and Mirin to twist Milosevic's arm there to end it. Is that basically right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. God dang Bill Clinton, man. Him and his old lady, too. All right, listen. thank you so much for doing the great work that you do. I've learned so much from you, and I really appreciate your time on the show, as always, Kit.
Oh, God bless you, Scott. Take care, my friend. And, keep up the fight.
All right, you guys, that's Kit Clarenberg. He's at thegrayzone.com with Max and all of them. This one is Kosovo War 25, Blair's Secret Invasion Plot to Topple Milosevic Revealed.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.